Hi.
Welcome to Sonic Fire episode 5. Wow. Okay. After this, I won't be able to count them on the fingers of one hand.
For our pleasure and your edification, this week we downloaded a couple of game demos to try them out, and we'll tell you what we think. We're also going to talk a little bit about movies that we've seen. I also completed God of War 3,
huzzah.
And I'll let you know how I felt about that experience.
I read a book.
Sonic Rob is going to talk about a book he recently finished.
I haven't finished it.
Some other stuff. So yeah, we're going to get on it, and we're going to podcast, and we're going to take, we promise, we're going to take less than 6 weeks to edit this footage.
It's currently, what, Earth Day?
No, that's the 22nd.
Oh.
This is just the closest Saturday.
Oh, okay. So it's Earth Day observed.
Mmm, delicious, life-giving coffee. Now I have the energy to entertain. So we downloaded 3 demos. We downloaded Just Cause 2, Supreme Commander 2, and Serious Sam HD, The First Encounter.
Which is, I think that's just Serious Sam, The First Encounter in HD.
That was the impression that we got.
Yeah.
We've
done no research here.
We're gonna
no idea what the point of this was.
But. Start talking about Serious Sam, first-person shooter. It was sort of unremarkable.
We didn't get that far, to be honest.
We didn't get that far. It's just a demo. It was just kind of like, oh yeah. I think it's definitely an older title that's just been ported to HD because we've all gotten so used to what happens in a first-person shooter, and it was just sort of doing them, that it was like, and there will be an enemy there, and I will shoot him, and there will be an enemy there, and I will shoot him, and it was so easy.
There was very little that was surprising, although the screaming suicide bomb guys were pretty fun.
Well, the character design was really funny, and the overall design was very campy. Like, when you pick up the shotgun for the first time, I went, oh yeah, shotgun, just as the computer says, yeah, baby. So it had a definite sense of humor, just the gameplay was sort of uninspired.
Yeah, I think maybe uninspired would be a good word for it. I don't know, maybe Serious Sam is one of those games that's supposed to shine in multiplayer.
Yeah.
We didn't try that. You tried it and got a bot.
I'm pretty sure it was a bot who just wanted to try and use the knife all the time.
Which, to be fair, that knife kind of owns.
The knife totally owns. Also, the double-barrel shotgun, delicious. In terms of the game.
I don't really feel like I would need to check that game out.
I do not need to check that game out. I have Team Fortress.
Mm.
Great review there. 4 minutes and 20 seconds in, we're done. So
well, that was one of them. We've
okay.
got two more.
Yeah. So
and then, bear in mind, that's 3 minutes of babble and 1 minute of serious.
Totally.
Yeah.
So the next game we can talk about was Supreme Commander 2, the sequel to Supreme Commander. Now, the original,
we presume. I mean.
The original Supreme Commander was criticized for having too complex an upgrade structure. There was too much to do, and so they're touting very much that they simplified the upgrade structure and it's easier to play. And we played the tutorial. We didn't get into a whole lot of actual gameplay.
There wasn't time. You know, by the time we were halfway through the tutorial, it was time for me to go home.
Yeah, and me to go to bed. So that tells you exactly how old we are.
On how long that tutorial is.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, we started it, and, what, 15 seconds into it, you're just like, why did we start this tutorial? I already know all this crap.
I believe the statement was actually, why did I do this to myself?
Yeah.
It was, it led to actually a very good idea, and if you use this idea, I'd like just a little bit of credit. No money, just credit. And it was that when you're choosing a tutorial, or that you should be able to tell the computer when it wants to give you the tutorial your level of experience with that type of game.
Yeah, I want my tutorial to have difficulty levels.
Yeah, so it'll be like, what does RTS mean? Do I always have to use the mouse? And, dude, just show me what's different.
Right.
And that would have been good, because there is unique stuff that you need to get in the tutorial. It's just so hard to get to the meat.
But there's also, use the mouse wheel to zoom the camera in and out, and I'm just going, yes, I'm trying to, like, think ahead. I'm already playing the tutorial before it tells me what to do.
And so, yeah, Supreme Commander, it seemed sort of, I want to say, a garden variety RTS.
I don't know. I liked the way that you could zoom way, way, way out. That was cool.
Yeah, you could get a very global perspective. You could have a lot of troops.
A lot of
dudes,
yeah.
You have little and big attack robots. Always a plus. It was just, it didn't really have a whole lot of flavor. It didn't have a whole lot of flair to it. Or personality, it seemed very robotic, strangely enough. And I've been
playing.
You know,
some people are into that.
Some people are into that. And if you're not into, if you're really into base building and building up a huge army and steamrolling someone, I have the feeling this is the game for you.
It's probably.
I've just been playing so much Dawn of War that's that weird RTS-RPG combo.
Well, there's no base in it.
Yeah, that I was just like, where's the fighting? You know, and it's like, it's not time for the fighting yet.
Yeah.
In its robot voice.
Well, I think Dawn of War probably is a little scaled back from Supreme Commander. I don't think it's really fair to compare them. I don't think they're really very similar beyond the fact that you have, you know, you're looking down and moving guys around.
Yeah. No, they're very different.
Yeah. So, that seems like maybe an apples to oranges comparison, but if you're coming at it with the idea that this is what I want to play and, you know, I'm getting something else, you're not going to be satisfied. I thought that it showed a little bit of promise. It looked a little... It kind of reminded me of a game from about 10 years ago called Z, which was a real-time strategy game with, you know, robots, and the robots, you know, kind of ran around and had personality, you know, like, you know, Chuck Norris or, you know, George Patton or something like that. You know, but yeah, it had that same kind of, here's a bunch of cute little robots running around, and honestly, it didn't look graphically all that advanced from Z either.
Yeah, the graphics were definitely not...
It was blocky, which, you know, it's all robots, so what are you going to do?
Yeah, and it's also one of those things that, like, you know... I could imagine having 1,000 of these guys on the screen, at which point you might be very happy that the graphics are somewhat simple, yeah. As your machine goes...
Well, what I want is, if I have, 30 of those guys, let me put them together into a giant, you know, Constructicon guy or something.
Mecha Shiva!
Yeah, seriously, that would be awesome. I don't know if Supreme Commander 2 actually lets you do that, but that would be cool.
I don't think it does. I think it's all about lots and lots of them.
I would be willing to probably try that demo again on my own time. Without you looking over my shoulder going, where's the death from above? You know, and maybe, you know, try it with a slightly more contemplative pace. That seems like something that might be a little more up my alley than up yours.
So, up yours.
I didn't really like the sort of fiction they were spinning. They're like, this is a corporate hellhole where there's advertising in the tutorial.
Yeah, that was weak.
Like, this tutorial's been brought to you by Annoying Corp, where... You know, it was not as cute as it thought it was.
It was like a cut-rate Gladys impression.
Mm. Kind of. I didn't really see that, but...
Yeah. Oh! A big criticism I had was there is fog of war, but it doesn't really indicate very well what you can't see. So it's not like when you have fog of war in other games and that area of the map is like black or very grayed out and you can tell the limits of your vision. You can't really tell the limits of your vision.
It does have little, like, there's a guy over here markers, like little diamonds, but you can't tell, like, are there no little diamonds over here because there's no guys over there, or because I can't see the arbitrary eyeball distance that would let me detect them.
Yeah.
I didn't care for that because it seems like having a whole bunch of dudes roll into your base like that is pretty much game over. That could happen kind of at any time if you're not...
Vigilant.
If you're not leaving, you know, splitting your army up, which is never what I personally want to do. I always do the Grand Armée de Nord.
So that was
Supreme
Commander 2.
That's probably a no for you, a maybe for me. I'm going to check it out some more, probably.
Yeah, maybe if it was cheap.
That too.
I'm definitely not paying full retail for that.
I don't think I pay full retail for hardly anything.
Congratulations!
I'm a cheap ass.
How about God of War 3?
That was a gift to you, so I'm going to, in the name of good taste, I'm going to refrain from answering.
Speaking about the cost. So, the third game that we downloaded for PC, was Just Cause 2, Just Cause, not Just Cost.
Yeah, it's not Just Cause, like, just because on this slangy, it's like Just Cause, like...
I have a Just Cause.
Operation Just Cause, the invasion of Panama to depose Manuel Noriega, former CIA agent and professional pain in the ass.
Just Cause 2, I guess my first note was that it's definitely designed to be a console title. It's a third-person shooter. It felt a lot to me like the hot, hot bastard child of Mercenaries and God of War.
It had that blowing stuff up thing. I don't know. I don't see the God of War angle, though.
The death tentacle.
Oh, well, that. You could argue that could be Prototype.
I never played that, so I can't argue that.
There's a death tentacle in Prototype as well.
Okay. You have this grappling hook.
Honestly, what it reminded me of was the original Tenchu. Do you remember the grappling hook in that game?
Do you remember how crappy I was at... How we talked about it in a podcast about how bad I was at Tenchu.
And do you remember how much we talked in that same podcast about how much I loved it? So yeah, there was a grappling hook in that game where you were just like over there and zip, it would zip you over there. You got this sort of portable zip line. The great thing in Just Cause is that you combine that with an infinitely respawning parachute.
Base jumping chute. And the best thing is that if you're grappling, you can't be hurt. So you could fall out of the sky for a mile, but if you grapple the ground right before you hit, you land soft as a feather.
Yeah, that was pretty great. I was a little less than impressed at first until we started getting the hang of how to put the systems together.
I believe the statement you made was, hey, this is disappointingly realistic.
You blew something up and it just kind of collapsed in a tumble of like smoke and the odd licking flame, and I was hoping for like a more mercenaries level, I throw a hand grenade and a mushroom cloud erupts kind of thing. And it didn't give us that at first, but the ability to sort of, there's a lot of stuff around the environment that blows up.
Yeah.
And I think that combining those things that blow up with things that you want blown up is probably one of the core ways to get this chaos that they want you to build up.
Yeah, they want you to build this chaos. Score. You build it up, and you unlock new missions by just running around and blowing shit up.
Yeah.
That's a pretty awesome premise
to me.
That's
a good idea. I enjoy this concept that... Well, honestly, that kind of goes against my urge, which would be, you know, I'm more of a surgical player in games where you kill stuff. And this seems like it's the kind of thing where you need to get shit all crazy and keep it that way.
You're making money off of destabilization. It's definitely pulling the curtain back from the sort of imperialist tendencies of westernized nations. It's like, man, we make money when shit is fucked up and no one can get their act together. So go in there, fuck shit up, make sure no one can get their act together because they're too busy killing you, and you'll make money.
I don't know, was there actually money in that game? Yeah, I guess you buy stuff. You buy, black market weapons.
Yeah.
And the more chaos there is, the more the black market flourishes. That's a
yes,
nice touch.
Yes, that's very... I believe...
The voice acting in the cinema was really awful.
Wow, it was like bad porno.
I don't think it was... I didn't even find it enjoyably bad. That was just really awful.
And then they do this thing in the cutscenes where they're trying to have realistic camera style. So the camera's, like, shaky. It's like watching the camera operator walk backward and he stumbles a little bit.
Yeah, there's a bit of... Paul Greengrass, Jason Bourneism stuff going on there.
I have to say, the gameplay was very fun. You run out of ammo too much. There needed to be more ammo.
Yeah, we had to... We were maybe, when we were playing... I don't know, when I was. I found that I probably should have been a little more conservative with my use of bullets. And a little more liberal with my use of the grappling hook and various other objects.
Yeah, I really wanted to shoot things more. And yeah. I ran out of bullets and couldn't shoot them. Although, I do have to say that Sonic Rob is better at this kind of game than me. Or better, at least, at thinking about this kind of game than me. Which makes sense, because he wants to design video games. There were these gas containers, and you shoot them, and they explode, and they shoot into the sky. And Sonic says to me, "Grapple it! Grapple and ride it!" And I'm like, okay, but I don't think you can do that. And I tried, and I failed, and I was like, okay, it's your turn to play the demo. First thing out of the gate. Grapple rides
yeah.
into the sky.
Like a
shouting out, "I am a golden god!" before he launches himself off of it, opening his base jumping chute to glide like an avenging Valkyrie onto some poor Central American village.
That was pretty great. Yeah, I felt pretty good about that, and I felt like that at that point that I and whoever did design Just Cause were kind of on the same page.
You were definitely in the same place.
Like, okay, you're telling me I can grapple lots of things, and things fly off all over the place, ergo, I should be able to combine these. One thing that I didn't like with the grappling mechanic was grappling onto that helicopter. And then it said, move around to, jack this chopper. And I'm like, that sounds like a great idea. Why can't I move with the movement controls? And got sort of shot off the bottom of it after a few minutes of dangling like a CIA pinata.
Yeah, I think that was definitely a demo / supposed to be on a console issue.
Maybe.
It looked pretty done.
Maybe I grappled it in the wrong place. I don't know, but that was kind of bullshit.
So Sonic was much better at the grappling. He was much more skilled with his death tentacle than I
was grappling. It was just, okay, grapple, parachute, glide, drop parachute, grapple over, hop into bell tower.
I think... one of the lessons of mercenaries, or one of the habits we got from mercenaries, was you can take down all of these guys. I think one of the things about Just Cause 2 is
run away from all these guys.
It seems to be you're supposed to parachute in, make some ruckus, and run the hell away.
Maybe. I mean, it may be that at some point in the game you find yourself much better equipped for that kind of situation.
Yeah, we just sort of had a leather vest and...
and a pistol.
A pistol and some artistically torn jeans.
Yeah.
I didn't feel very armored.
No. No. We died quite a few times, yeah. Actually.
But that definitely looked fun. I think the painter...
Is that what he is today?
He asked for something slightly less creepy than the leather worker.
It's all going to sound like serial killers. You think the baker sounds wholesome? which...
So I think the painter would really like Just Cause 2. He really likes the sort of run around, shoot things, not really real, you know, very sandboxy. Yeah, he really likes Mercenaries.
Well,
so.
It came out a couple weeks
Oh, that's
ago.
Right. It's the bastard child of Grand Theft Auto and Mercenaries. And the stunt jumping. So every now and then you get this thing that
you
says...
You lost me there.
That says stunt jump.
And what it's a control prompt. It says to stunt jump, press this key.
Press this key. And what happens when that happens is, say, you're base jumping and you're sort of gliding in over a village and you're over a car. It says stunt jump. And then you jump down onto the car. It's click here to do something cool.
Yeah.
It's all these mini
quick time events. It's a contextual do something cool button, yeah.
And speaking of quick time events, I just finished playing God of War 3.
Okay, we're out of the realm of demos and into the realm of
and Just Cause 2,
real
games. I would definitely pay $20 for it.
I might be willing to pay $25 or $30, depending on how much I enjoyed the demo. It looks like a game that might have a good long life, depending on how long the scenario is. It doesn't look like the sort of thing they'd try to put multiplayer in or anything like that.
No.
So, which means that the majority of their effort would go to game modes that I would actually play. So that kind of bumps my interest up a little bit. I do enjoy those kinds of, you know, pound away on this world in order to reshape it kind of games.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to find myself the time to try out Red Faction Guerrilla, for instance, mm-hmm. which is the game where you destroy everything with a hammer.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I need to play this game.
You're the one downloading all these freaking demos. Okay. Moving on.
Moving on. So I just finished playing God of War 3. I thoroughly enjoyed both God of War 1 and God of War 2. I actually only recently... finished God of War 2, being shamed into the action by both my brother and my life partner with the statement, you got the third one, you haven't finished the second one yet?
I bought you the third one and you haven't...
Now,
it's only been out for 3 years.
I had to search my house to find the cables to hook up my PlayStation 2.
It's not backwards compatible?
And you're talking... No, I didn't get that version.
Oh, okay.
Anyway... So I play God of War 3. I really love God of War. I love the style. I don't know what they're third-person action platform... God of War style games.
It's got a big, muscly, naked man with no mercy and no pity. I think that's pretty much all you need.
That's pretty much what I like in a game. I played it. It definitely... the graphics are stupendous. The rendering, it's really beautiful. One of the things that's been noted is, you know, in the first game, he goes through this whole thing to get the power to kill one god, and they pretty much drop like flies this entire game. You're killing a god, like, every 5 to 10 minutes. You're just like, and you're dead.
It's a good thing the Greek pantheon is so big.
Exactly. And you kill a lot of people you don't have to kill, and you're very, very callous, and so you're Kratos.
How'd you feel about that?
You know, I knew it was coming. I actually read an interview with one of the head designer guys, and he talked about where Hera dies. Spoiler alert.
Everybody dies.
Everybody
dies. That's not a spoiler.
And that originally, she's not someone that you have to fight, and that right now it's just an animation. Mm-hmm. She talks smack, Kratos just turns around and breaks her neck. And he said that originally...
Right, it was playable.
They had you... It was playable, and that went too far. He was just like, man, that's a woman, and you're... Basically,
ripping off Helios' head while he complains about it is not going too far.
Well, there's a difference between someone you have to fight and someone you don't have to fight. Mm. It would have been just beating her. It would have been...
Beating a woman for no reason?
Pretty much beating a woman for no reason, except to hurt her more before you kill her. So I sort of respected the fact that they had a consciousness.
So they've cut down on the torture in God of War?
They cut down on the torture. I really like the fact that the designer was very conscious of the fact that it's like, you know what, that's bad. The worst part is when you kill Hercules.
Hercules.
You beat his face in.
Right.
And they say if you stop, you can see his eyes rolling around. And
ew.
It is really graphic. It's
by graphic, do you mean gross?
Yes. I tried to get through all of those as quickly as possible.
There's more than one?
Well, every time, the most striking one is when you kill Poseidon and when you kill Zeus, are the two most striking ones. And when you kill Poseidon, which is the first god. If you've played the demo with the water horses when you're on Gaia and you're running around. Anyway, you're fighting Poseidon, and when you go to do the final QuickTime event to finish him, the point of view switches, and you have the POV of Poseidon, and you are pressing buttons to hurt yourself, effectively. And I had to pause for a moment, and then I got the most wicked grin on my face, and just went, yes, beat me! Ah! Oh! Oh, you're gonna put my... Ah! So that was a really interesting contextual shift. And
so
they do that a couple
looking
times.
Looking at Kratos from the outside.
There's a lot of perspective shifts. There's a whole puzzle based on what looks like an M.C. Escher drawing, and putting together an M.C. Escher drawing that you're then running around on. It's really creative. The puzzles are incredibly creative. None of them... There's no... If you remember in the first one when you're climbing out of Hazy's and there's these swirling blades, and it's one of those timing jumping puzzles that's built to make us all bald from screaming and ripping our hair out, they didn't have any of those.
So they're fair.
They were all fair. They were all doable. They were not necessarily easy, but when you figured them out, you're like, aha! You felt smarter, not, why didn't I get that before? The enemies were really fun. They changed up some of the traditional QuickTime events, so there's more than one way to kill a Minotaur, more than one way to kill a Gorgon. Yeah, it was really nice.
You don't have to go, here we go again, I have this muscle memorized.
Yeah, you actually have to pay attention.
That's cool.
The QuickTime prompts were improved, I think, really well. They did a really good
job.
They're
on the edge of the screen.
They're on the edge of the
corresponding
screen.
Corresponding to the face button direction, right?
Corresponding to the direction. So if it's like L1, L2, or L1, R1, then it's up at the top. Or if it's L3, R3, it's down at the bottom. The ones where you have to wiggle the stick or turn the stick in a various direction actually shows you doing it, so you know you did it. Mm. Not, oh, you cheated, I didn't get it.
Right.
In God of War 2, Zeus was really hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, I played on normal, and I was just like, God, why don't you jump, motherfucker? And in this one, Zeus was tough, but not undoable. I killed him on my third try. So I felt really good about that. He was still tough, and you do have to fight him a couple times, but I still felt pretty good about that.
Okay, so you got some kind of challenge.
It was really fun. If you like that kind of game, it is very violent. It's very gory. There's still lots of sex. The Aphrodite part,
lots
hilarious.
Of sex.
There's lesbianism.
Oh, yeah? Does it take place on Lesbos?
No, when you show up...
This is the first time that there's been lesbians in a game where you could actually have it be contextual, like, we're on Lesbos. Guess who's here?
Hi, I'm Sappho!
Yeah.
Actually, it's when you meet Aphrodite, she's writhing around with two of her handmaidens.
Well, she could just be writhing for fun. You don't know what's going on there. You just got the best look on your face.
And then when you're entertaining her, you're watching the two handmaidens, and they're commenting on your performance. And if you fail to hit a cue, they totally are just like, ugh, whatever. And you get,
Wow, I feel judged, and I haven't even actually done that. Dang.
That part was...
Oh, my God. Oh, not an audience.
And you do get a fair amount of experience for, going back to the well. So, for the first time...
You mean
time,
Aphrodite's well? Or?
Yes. So, if you have sex with her once, you get some experience. But if you do it when you, like, come back from another thing, and it's totally optional, you get a buttload of experience.
So to speak...
Sorry, I didn't mean that.
Do a bunch of red orbs fly out?
Yes.
Do they kind of pour out?
Not like that. Not. It's not illustrated in that way.
Sorry, we're taking this to a very...
They added more female...
Weird.
Supporting characters, so a lot of the... Like the archers...
You mean like victims?
The grunts. Uh-huh. The grunt soldiers are females, which I liked. As a feminist, equal opportunity slay. Mm-hmm. So, and they got, you got new magic, which was pretty cool. Yeah, it was really fun. It really delivered. They had one rhythm puzzle, because everything has to have a rhythm puzzle, but it was fairly innocuous and pretty easy. Mm-hmm. And, you actually end up playing the God of War theme song.
Cute.
So it's cute.
All right.
So, it was really fun. It's definitely a buyer. It's an A title. It's going to have some replayability because I'll be getting an HD television this summer, so I can actually play it in its full glory.
You can actually read what's going on and...
Yeah, so
You'll know the name of your combo.
If you liked God of War and God of War 2, or if you suffered through Dante's Inferno and need to get the taste out of your mouth...
Yeah, I mean, the waiting is, I guess, over. You don't have to deal with all these weak sisters like Dante's Inferno and, to a lesser extent, Darksiders.
Yeah, so definitely, if you like to think God of War 3, check it out. It delivers, for real. It does have an ambiguous ending. Spoiler.
If you don't talk about it, that's not a spoiler.
Do you not want me to talk about it?
Eh.
Are you going to play it? You don't even own a PlayStation. Anyway, there is some question. They have left the door open for Kratos to do other things.
Well, they've already put out two or three prequels on the PSP. So, they can do other... They've already shown they can do other things with Kratos without finishing... without continuing off of the story that ends in God of War 3. There's all kinds of other stuff they've done. So it seems that they're building a healthy universe in which to write and play.
So definitely thumbs way, way, way... Actually, bloody, bloody severed thumbs way up.
Yeah?
Yeah, totally so awesome.
This is like a full retail worthy
game I here. Believe so. Cool. I'm happy.
I feel better about paying full retail for it then.
Ha-ha! Got you. Yeah, definitely.
Cool.
So you read a book.
I did.
And you watched a movie.
Several, which I would like to talk... I would actually like to talk a little bit about a game first.
Okay.
I've been playing Shadow of the Colossus for Make Me Play Video Games.
Nice.
And I'm going to...
Make Me Play Video Games is a feature article series.
It is. It's about as regular as anything we do. But yeah, the idea
more fiber.
Is that I put up these two games that probably I should have played by now and let the community, which is to say my sister and my girlfriend, choose which one
some
I should...
Some of your coworkers and my coworkers.
That's true. Decide which one I should play. To completion, the premise was that I would play nothing else, and I managed to hang on to that during Far Cry for 50 hours, but I just can't... I cannot fucking do that. That's, you know, I'm going way too far against my own nature here, and I've cheated a wee bit.
That's okay.
All right, so
I won't tell Shadow of the Colossus.
I feel better getting that off my chest. Shadow of the Colossus, the thing that's really striking me so far, I'm a number of colossi in. There are 16 of them, and I've killed 3 or 4, I think, now.
And I remember that you started playing this game a long time ago.
When I bought it back in 2005? Yeah.
Wow, taking it back.
Actually, no, I got it for Christmas, but that's not important. I got started on it, and life kind of intervened around that time. I kind of put it down, and, you know, it's sort of become a modern classic. It's championed by a lot of the games as art people, or a lot of the, hey, this game's kind of neat people, and, you know, I'm glad it got chosen to move on to. It is really gorgeous. The frame rate could probably be better, but what are you going to do? It's pushing the PS2 pretty far.
I remember it was supposed to be sort of a swan song, look what our console can do, because the PS3 had come out.
It's from Sony.
Yeah.
The PS3, I guess it came out the next year.
It was really close.
So the environments are lovingly rendered. It's not exactly an open world game because you have to tackle the colossi in order.
Mm.
You could go anywhere you wanted to. There's just no point until then, as far as I can tell. The colossi themselves actually kind of are the thing that probably, it kind of sucks to say that, but of all, if we were talking about like graphics, the colossi themselves are probably the least impressive thing. They're huge. But they're actually noticed to be blocky.
Mm.
And, you know, they kind of cover that with the idea, oh, well, you know, they're made out of stone and grass and stuff like that. But they just sort of don't look that great to me.
You've been spoiled by the next generation.
I kind of have. And I've got to be fair and say, yes, I'm going back a generation, let's be fair. The thematic emphasis of the game seems to be on the notion of, at least as far as I can tell so far, you know, I'm like, maybe a fifth of the way into it or something.
Mm-hmm.
On the exploring the concept of failure and things just sort of going wrong and bad choices being made. I mean, the whole thing starts and the main character's sort of beloved is already dead.
Yeah.
You know, and they're both very young. I mean, he's absolutely dwarfed by his horse. Yeah.
The whole thing is that he's been told if he kills all the colossi, then his beloved will be brought back to life.
Right. And then you get to where these colossi live, and it's this huge sort of ruined expanse of, you know, grassy fields and beaches and things like that, and swamps and all that, and there's all these sort of crumbled stone buildings, and the colossi themselves look like crumbly stone buildings in a way. It's obviously that there was a culture thriving here, and it's gone now. It's dead. Maybe it's been killed by the Colossi. Maybe they made the Colossi. Who knows? That's hard to say at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, every time you do kill one, the game, you know, the Colossus falls over in a, you know, very brief little cutscene. And then you have a few moments to sort of run around and go, I wonder what I'll do next. And then a whole bunch of crazy black tentacular shadowy shit erupts out of the Colossus and stabs you. And you drop to the ground. And then you, like, you go into the light. There's, like, a tunnel of light and stars streaking by, and you go into it, and then you wake up in the temple with, where you started,
mm-hmm.
where your dead girlfriend is, and there's a shadow over you, and there's one shadow for each Colossus that you've killed so far, and they're sort of standing there checking you out.
Mm.
And the whole thing, it feels really like you kill this Colossus, which is just sort of hanging out. They're not really...
They have not offended.
They don't. They don't hassle you till you hassle them. Then you die and are resurrected, apparently. At least that's the vibe that it gives off.
Yeah.
And the whole thing has this real... Yeah, this vibe of even when you win, you've screwed up.
So...
It's just there's upfuckery everywhere. And it's really sad
in a way. Do you know how it finishes?
Huh?
Do you know how it finishes? Okay. I say nothing.
All right.
When you finish it, we'll talk.
We'll talk about it again.
Because I have never played this game, but Wikipedia is there for us.
Do you want to borrow it after I'm done? Or?
No.
Oh, all right.
Sounds depressing.
Yeah, so far it's pretty depressing.
So
I've got more of that in store. All right.
Excellent.
Good to know.
Woo!
I've also been playing a bit of Persona 4, which is... possibly the most Japanese thing I've ever played.
Oh, God. Is it a JRPG or...
Boy, howdy. It's a
so
JRPG.
I'm going to inform the listening base. I have never played a Final Fantasy.
Nope.
I mean, I've tootled around, but I have never set out to play Final Fantasy. I don't like JRPG or White Knight Chronicles. Just not into their that brand of aesthetic and gameplay.
Well, you demand different rewards for your time. I mean, you've put how many hundred hours into Dawn of War 2 at this point?
I really like a bloody crazy Western shit.
Persona is a combination of a dungeon crawler and a high school sim. Yeah. Yeah.
I have made yet another strange look.
Yeah, you look like you're about to barf, actually.
My stomach's been kind of upset all day.
And so, yeah. But it's really, really amazingly well written. The dialogue is mostly really good. The characters... The game is really psychological. The dungeon crawling all takes place in a TV dream world where characters are being sucked into it one at a time and revealing parts of their true natures to themselves, which they must then confront. And it's the rebellion against their own true nature that causes the strife in this fake world. It's all very Jungian.
I was about to say, man, that's pretty heavy.
It is pretty heavy, and yeah, so the whole, you know, that you sort of fight these evil shadow versions of the characters one by one, and as they accept that truly is a part of themselves, you know, their jealousy or their greed or their manipulativeness, they have to say, okay, that can be a part of me without it being all of me. And, you know, time and time again, you know, it becomes sort of a running joke, where you'll encounter someone who's, you know, facing off against their shadow, and, you know, they'll say, you're not, you know, and someone in your party will go, just don't freaking say that! You know, you can think it, but if you say it, all hell's gonna break loose, and they go, you're not part of me! And the shadow goes, ah ha ha ha, and gets all big and powerful
oh.
because of the denial, you know. That part of it is really interesting. You gain power in the game by developing social relationships. So you start off having moved to this new town, you don't know anybody, and as you get introduced to people, you start these social links, and then as you spend more time with them and, you know, elicit proper responses out of them or they out of you, your friendships grow, and each of these friendships is represented, I should say, by an arcana of tarot. And so you'll have a chariot link and a magician link and a priestess link and all
mm-hmm.
that, and they get stronger as your relationships get stronger. And then you have, what do you call them? Magic monsters that live in your brain. Those are the personae of the title.
Okay.
And each of them also has an arcanum.
Mm.
And so as your social link for an arcanum gets stronger, the magic monster that lives in your brain of that arcanum also gets stronger.
Oh, okay.
In short. So you have to make friends, play basketball, study well, and all that stuff in order to survive the dungeon crawling that happens at night when you get sucked into your television.
Wow.
Right? It is so freaking weird.
But at the same time, such a lesson for geeks.
Oh, no, yeah. It's,
if you don't have a healthy social life, you're going to suck.
Well, if you don't have a healthy social life, play this fake bunch of social lives in this video game. It is oddly compelling. You have a routine. I mean, you're going to school Monday through Saturday, which apparently they do. And a lot of your time is spent going to class, taking pop quizzes, deciding who to have lunch with.
Oh my god,
your
no.
Your after school
no.
hobby activities. And then you have to decide, okay, am I going to go into the TV tonight? Or will I read this Ernest Hemingway novel and make myself a braver person? Because they measure that too, apparently.
Ernest Hemingway also makes you a drunker person.
Well, it's not literally Ernest Hemingway, but anyway. Yeah. So that's...
What's the point? Like, what's the...
There's a lot to do. The point is that people are being sucked into the TV world and are being murdered that way.
Because
they wind up wandering around until they run into their shadow self and get killed unless you show up and help out. Psychological / violent help.
It's like The Cell with Jennifer Lopez.
Kinda, yeah. It is kinda like The Cell in a way. TV realm is very weird. It's kind of... I mean, it's the sort of thing where the environment is being shaped by someone else's neuroses or psychoses. And so they've done a lot of really creative stuff with that. You know, a lot of the sort of boss monsters, the, you know, embodiment of your evil Silent Hill version of yourself, are really... They're neatly designed, considering this is, again, a PS2 game that came out, like, last year. They're sticking with that to the grave, yo. I imagine at some point...
Viable technology.
I imagine
and I
at
suppose
some point
a lot
Sony
of people...
will stop licensing PS2 games and just be like, look, you need to make PS3 games and move PS3 consoles.
Well, I think... I wonder what... total aside, I wonder what the penetration of the market in Japan is for PS3s that have the PS2 emulator versus the US.
I could not possibly...
And on top, cool. That sounds cool. That doesn't sound like anything I want to do.
No, that's what you've got me around for.
Exactly. All right. I'm going to go downstairs and change laundry. Want to help?
Sure. We're going to take a break here, and when we come back, we're going to talk books and movies.
All right, and it'll be like we never left, because this is radio. What the fuck are we talking about?
Did I tell you about the guy at my work who was telling me about his bug zapper, and... He had it, you know, going one night, and he heard this huge zot clunk, and he goes out there and checks it out, and there's a frog who has gotten the bright idea of eating the bugs around the bug zapper, and its tongue got stuck to the zapper coil, and then pulled it smack dab up into the screen, and it was, like, cooking away there.
Does it taste like chicken?
I don't think he ate it, but...
You should have ate it.
I just think that's interesting that you can evolve enough to have a good idea, but not evolve quite far enough to realize what's wrong with that idea.
Well, that's the next...
That could have been the mega frog, except...
Well, that's the next mutation, right?
Right, yeah.
Well, mega ultra frog.
I don't think he's going to get a chance to pass that trait on.
He might already have.
That's true. There might be...
And it might have been a female frog.
Mega polywogs.
Mega wogs. That is something completely different.
And we're back.
Frog. Mega polywog. Okay.
That was not quite so instantaneous as we promised.
We really promised it would be. On a note, for What's My Name, which is a fairly regular feature about handles, a handle being the name you'll give yourself when you do things online, I have come to a determination. You cannot use the word Darth.
Darth?
Darth, as in Darth Vader. Or Darth Sidious, or what have
Darth
you.
Darth Sonic?
It
is that just not
is
cool?
Is always bad.
Is it that the equivalent of posing with your weapons on your MySpace page?
Absolutely. I have a friend whose handle is Darth Taco. Doesn't work. Darth Gumby? Perhaps, because Gumby's awesome. But generally, if all you've got is Darth, if that's your creativity, just go with something else, man. Seriously.
Keep back to the drawing board.
Yes. So that's your... What's my name for today is Darth Anything. Sucks. Although Darth Anything would be pretty good.
I don't know.
Nope, still sucks. Got
no,
Darth in
sorry.
It.
Sorry.
All right. So you have more...
Books! I've been reading the second book by Stieg Larsson.
Ah, the girl who...
Played with Fire.
Okay. The first one being The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, recently made into an excellent Scandi-Weegian movie and about to be made into a terrible American movie.
Yeah. Really? Kristen yes. Stewart? Really? Really? Kristen Stewart? Really?
She was really good in Panic Room.
That was 10 years ago.
I'm just trying to be the voice of positivity.
The second book ratchets up the sort of the budget, if you will. The story is a lot bigger in scale. There's a lot... You know, it's still... The first book was a locked room mystery, for all intents and purposes, except the room was an island. And there was a sort of conspiracy-ish angle. Well, in the second one, there's a much bigger conspiracy, so the ante has been upped. The same characters are, by and large, in it. A couple of people who were minor players in the first book come back as bigger players in the second one, which is neat. You can kind of remember, oh, yeah, right, that guy, and this, you know. It's the kind of thing where I don't know if he was planning a trilogy or if he's just sort of running with some little strands that he left open for himself. The sex has been toned down a lot, which is good. There's still a strong angle of... In the first one, there was a lot of concern with violence against women. The original title was The Men Who Hate Women.
Wow.
Der Mann som Hatten Kvinder, which is probably not how you say that.
It was a good shot, man.
Thank you. And that returns in a respect, but it's been taken in a different kind of direction. I don't want to spoil too much because these are mystery stories.
And no spoilery.
There's only so much you can say about them. They've done an interesting sort of trick this time around. The author's written it so that we spend the first segment of the book with our two main characters. Then in the second sort of
act,
we get it solely from the point of view of one of the protagonists while the other one begins acting in a very, in a really inexplicable manner.
Mm-hmm.
And so the sort of mystery is, okay, what's this person doing? And then in the third act, we get the same events from the point of view of the other person.
Excellent.
And then I'm assuming at the end, we'll catch back up with where we were at the end of the second act. So there's some sort of time leaping going on there. It's again, a really great page turner, much like the first one was.
I was shocked to learn that these novels are being published posthumously.
Oh, yeah, he's quite dead.
Stieg Larsson is quite dead. He left the manuscripts for the trilogy of girl novels, and then a couple other manuscripts, but those were the three that were, like, readily publishable.
Sure. And they've been, you know, runaway hits in Sweden.
Yeah, they love him in Sweden.
Sure. They made the trilogy of films. They're made. They're done. Mm. They've been out, and I think they came out in, like, 3 movies in 2 years or something crazy like that.
Wow.
They won the Swedish Academy Award thing.
Sweet.
I did actually see the film of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo a couple weeks ago.
I remember you saying something to me that you thought that was as good a film as could be made from the book, which is pretty high praise.
Yeah, I mean, they had to simply... It's a 2.5-hour film. It's butt-numbingly long. None of that
time is... Apparently you've never seen Kenneth Branagh's Hamlet.
None of that time is wasted, unlike in Kenneth Branagh's Hamlet. It's, great performances all around. There are some things where they took two characters and stuffed them into one character, Lord of the Rings style, just for simplicity's sake.
I'm Glorfindelas!
Yeah, there's some plot elements that are just removed entirely that it doesn't really suffer for.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of removed. They removed
the,
a little complexity.
The essence and the theme.
Oh, absolutely. It's very, very faithful to the original book to the point where there's a scene of really, really outstanding sexual violence about halfway through the story.
When you say outstanding, you mean like a sore thumb?
It's remarkable.
Wow.
How unpleasant this is. And, you know, having read the book, I spent the whole sort of first half of the film kind of squirming in my seat because I was really sure this was coming.
And then it came.
And then it did, and it was just like, oh, it's awful, and I was, like, hiding my eyes and all this stuff. It's really, you know, really terrible and terrifying. And then I was able to sit back and watch the film in comfort.
So, you are such a weird monkey.
It's the worst of, I don't know if it's the worst event in the film, because it's all, the whole, all of the stories are to a degree, all of them, both of the ones I've read so far, including the two sort of intermingling plot threads in the first story, especially, are about violence against women, about misogyny as a mental illness.
Wow. What's the name of the third book?
The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest. And it's not out in the U.S. yet, as far as I know.
Why is this? Why do they do this to us?
I would like
to borrow these books.
Well, I still have to finish the second one.
Well, I still haven't read the first one, so we're good.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I'm really torn. I don't know, because you can borrow that book from me anytime. That movie's not going to be in theaters that much longer. It's only playing in small theaters, and it is...
Do I have to see it on the big screen?
No, it does not demand the big screen treatment. You could easily Netflix it if you wanted to and get the impact of it. That's true. But
so now
when I go to see it,
I'm going to spend the whole first half squirming.
Hopefully. You should spend the whole film squirming. It is squirm-worthy.
Squirmy.
I kind of have this bias of wanting to encourage people to...
See it in a theater so they'll bring the second one?
Yeah, spend the money in the to see it in the theater so that they'll show the second one in the theater.
Okay. It's a worthy cause.
I ask you to support this film with your dollars.
Okay. That's perfectly legitimate. I have done that with other movies.
A movie that, you know, you could also support with your dollars would be Kick-Ass, which I went and saw last night with the Baker.
Speak to me. So I really liked the preview for Kick-Ass.
Then you'll enjoy the film.
So premise for anyone who doesn't know is a bunch of teenagers decide to become masked heroes.
Right. Superheroes sans super, if you will.
And the one-sentence synopsis I've heard is a graphic novel meets Quentin Tarantino.
I wanted to talk about the Tarantino angle in a minute.
And everyone should know that I hate Quentin Tarantino, so...
Right. Yeah, hopefully this won't mess you up too badly. The film is very bloody. There's a lot of... The problem is that the main... His problem, anyway. It's not a problem for the film. Is that the main character, Kick-Ass, is not a good superhero. There are better ones around. He's a B-lister. Even though he kind of came up with the idea... Other people have taken it and run with it.
He's an idea man.
He is totally an idea man. And yeah, they really don't shy away from just beating the ever-loving shit out of him. But he winds up in the hospital a few times, so it's pretty great. It's not exactly like, here's what would really happen if someone tried this. There is still a strong fantasy element to it. It's just, here's what would happen to you if you tried this. You would be this guy. Comic book nerd. It's a very comic book nerd film.
Okay.
There is a segment that's done as comic book panels. One of the superhero characters also just happens to be a comic book illustrator, which I haven't read the comic. I don't know if it's actually like that, but it seems like a really...
Metatextual?
It seems like a real shout-out to the comic community.
Metatextual, my favorite word.
Mine is disestablishmentarianism.
Oh, that's weak. Everybody's favorite word is that. I really like speckle. Although squirmy's moving up there right now.
My favorite word is indeed. I did want to talk a little bit about the character of Hit Girl.
Okay.
Who's the most Tarantino-y character. Mm-hmm. Really briefly, everybody's talking about Nick Cage's Adam West impersonation as Big Daddy / Batman.
Okay.
He's not doing an Adam West impression at all. He's doing a Captain Kirk impression.
And it's coming off as Adam... God, that...
Apparently people see a Batman suit and hear a you know, funny halted speech and think, oh, he's doing, you know, campy Batman. He's not. He's doing Shatner.
Okay. Nick Cage... Lo, how the mighty have fallen. Success destroyed that man.
Come on, his son's name is Kal-El. He's just insane, is what it is. He's been living in Nick Cage land for a very long time
now.
Well,
he's been living in Coppola land for all his life.
But I did want to talk a little bit about Hit Girl.
Okay, speak to us.
Well, Hit Girl is, you know, she's in the trailer, obviously. She's,
with the butterfly knife.
Right, and she's got sort of this double-bladed spear and all this stuff. She and Big Daddy are the superheroes who are actually capable of doing stuff.
Masked heroes. They're
fine.
Not super?
They're not super. They're heroes. Fine. They're vigilantes, really. So it's not that they are what keeps it from being a film about what would happen if people just ran around standing up for people. I mean, early on, Kick-Ass gets this little soliloquy about you know, why he's doing what he's doing. He you know, predictably, he does it while bleeding all over the place and being threatened by people. That is sort of interesting and funny and kind of noble in its way. And then you get these other characters who are capable of doing this without taking a scratch.
Mm.
And, you know, this, of course, kind of makes him feel kind of funny. But it also makes me feel kind of funny. Because then I realize he's just some guy getting the shit kicked out of him for no really good reason.
But he thinks it's a good reason.
He thinks it's a good reason. It's on
and
principle.
It could be a
but
good
not,
reason.
It doesn't really... do a lot. These are the ones who are affecting something. But what makes Hit Girl weird is that I think she's really kind of an anti-Tarantino character. I think she throws a lot of, maybe particularly Quentin Tarantino's, fetishes up in your face and shows you how gross they are when you really actually, when you stop hinting at them and just do it. So
okay.
She's partly the way that we, you know, look at women in action movies. We saw a trailer for this movie called The Losers, where Zoe Saldana is in it just
yes.
being sexy and killing shit all over the place. We sexualize violence on the part of women, you know, capability on the part of women as, you know, it's like the Bayonetta thing. Yeah, you're kicking ass all over the place and being all empowered, but I'm still gazing at you, and you're doing it all for my gaze.
We never see ugly chicks kicking ass.
No, we don't. And
like the kind who could actually fire a rocket launcher without being thrown backwards?
Well, so, you know, so here we have it with an 11-year-old girl. She's kicking ass, she's winking at people, mm-hmm. She literally dresses up like a little schoolgirl in, like, a plaid skirt, you know, and all that with the pigtails mm-hmm. and a silenced pistol at one point. And even her superhero costume has a plaid skirt.
Okay.
And like a raver wig. And I think that's another, just the fetishization of youth that we have. Like, you know, remember in Kill Bill with the story of Oren, where she's like this, you know, her family gets killed, and then she, like, lets herself be statutorily raped to kill the guy and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But she's basically really, Hit Girl is dressing up like Britney Spears in her first video.
Yeah.
It's just that Britney Spears wasn't too young to fuck at that point, and Hit Girl kind of is.
Yeah.
Britney Spears was 16. It was conceivable. You know, Hit Girl's just doing it just a few years younger, and it's horrifying.
Mm. Well,
only way that you could take it, you know, to the very furthest, you know, Tarantino-y extreme would be to make her Asian somehow.
Yeah.
You know, the fetishization of her otherness would be complete.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, is that girls are taught that's how you're supposed to want to look. You're supposed to fetishize, women fetishize themselves as much as men fetishize them. Because,
well, I think women are encouraged to by a patriarchal society to do that. I don't know if that's something that they would take on ordinarily.
But, yeah. Anyway.
But yeah, I think that the I don't know that she's Tarantino-esque. I think she's a satire of Tarantinoism. At least I hope so. They even play Tarantino music when she's having action scenes.
That's one of the things I really dislike about Tarantino is, to a certain extent,
his
women are fairly empowered, but at the same time, the gaze is there. You are always staring at women. You never empathize with the women in his films. You never feel for the women in his films. The Bride, more to a certain extent, but she commits horrific acts of violence against other women.
Well, and, that's the only way to make it fair. I mean, if it was a dude going around killing women all the time, then
because
you wouldn't be able to have all those awesome catfights.
Yeah. To a certain extent, it's also, no one cares if fat chicks get their revenge. I mean, look at Oren.
Wow.
People care because she's hot. Look at the Bride.
That's
people care because she's. That's what makes it tragic.
If she
someone
was fat, it wouldn't be tragic.
If she was fat and ugly, it would be okay to abuse her. It's only not okay to abuse her because she's thin, white, and pretty. I mean, to a certain extent, that is absolutely
Someone's
true.
Someone's probably subverted that at some point, but I can't think of an example.
I want to say Gabri Sidibe being like some
action heroine.
Hell yes. Do you think she would not rock that?
People like it when Queen Latifah gets revenge.
That is true. So I really think that you're right. There's an intense fetishization of women in films and their revenge and their violence. But I was watching that preview for The Losers with Zoe Saldana, and
that took that kind of to another level for me. That was just,
I liked the fact that she was, in fact, tougher than all of them.
Yeah, but, you know, that's still, that just makes it that much more rewarding that we get to check her out.
Exactly.
It's like the Lara Croft thing.
And yet,
you know,
she still fucks him. You know, and it's like, no matter how beautiful or competent or strong you are, you will still fall for this schmuck who's a hero.
Now,
because we tell you to.
If she, like, said, okay, we can have sex, but I get to wear a strap-on and you get to take it in the butt, because I'm the top.
Oh, if she was pegging him, that would be awesome. They're like, suck it, bitch. You know, so, come over here and suck mommy's cock.
It's like, yes, we can fuck, but I'm going to be doing the penetrating. You know, that would be different.
Yeah, because otherwise the message is, no matter how strong, competent, or good a woman is at what she does, mm-hmm. she is still always vulnerable to you sexually.
Well, but then, of course, you're just sort of, that plays into the whole being dominant involves being the penetrator thing, which is,
we're getting a little too political for you. Sorry, it's a media
block. Otherwise, I thought, you know, Kick-Ass was, it was fine. I had a good time. I laughed in a lot of places.
Okay.
I don't know. Some of the criticism I've seen said that it, you know, it's too cynical or it's too vulgar. There's a lot of swearing. There's a lot of gore. That sort of thing doesn't bother me.
Do you think people levy those criticisms because it's based on a comic book and they feel like comic books are for kids rather than the graphic novel movement?
I think we've gotten past that. I mean, it is weird that it involves a lot of
children.
You know, there's a lot of stuff that takes place in comic books. There are a lot of children involved, and they're doing stuff like they're having sex, they're swearing, they're using drugs. But that shouldn't be shocking anymore. The Secret Life of the American Teen is on ABC Family. No one is Dobie Gillis. That was never real.
Well, there are still people who are trying to prop up that narrative, so.
Sure. this movie's not going to help with that.
Okay.
And so if you're not going to like it on those terms, and yeah, if you want to, I suppose you could say the film is morally reprehensible.
Okay.
Depending on your morals.
Are there characters in the film who are morally reprehensible?
No, I'd say the whole film is like okay. that. There's no one who's all that particularly pure in the film.
Okay, cool. So, I've noticed something. The painter and I went to see... Oh, what was that movie we went to see? We went to see a movie the other night. We hadn't been to a movie together in months and months and months. And we went to see... God, it was middling...
And memorable, apparently.
Oh, God, what did we go see? I can't for the life... I remember that it was disappointingly bad, but as much as I... Was it an adaptation? Is there like a childhood adaptation that's come out recently?
Alice in Wonderland?
No, totally not interested in that film.
Oh.
Clash of the Titans.
Ah.
So we went to see Clash of the Titans together.
What'd you think of that?
So we knew it wasn't going to be good.
Right, no, that... I don't... If you're doing any kind of honest homage to the original Clash of the Titans, you're not making art.
Yeah, it was... It definitely had some shite moments. There were some things I really liked. There were some very good effects. The giant scorpions were the bomb.
Okay, so at this point, we're in the equivalent of praising the graphics.
Yeah, we're praising the graphics. The Medusa scene was actually good. Like, I was quite pleased with both the effects and the narrative.
Okay.
And the outcome, which we all know what it is. But
sure.
So we went to see Clash of the Titans, and we were just kind of like, meh, okay, we love Liam Neeson, but this isn't so good. And a lot of the...
So what's wrong with it?
Well, it's Clash of the Titans, so...
Well, you know, you knew that when you bought the ticket. It said that right on there.
It was a pure nostalgia sell.
How did it disappoint you?
So it, the plot changes directions very abruptly at the end.
I hate that.
Shall I spoil?
No.
Okay. The characters spend a lot of time railing at the gods like they're their oligarchian overmasters.
Yeah, I heard the film's like aggressively atheist or something like
it's
that.
It's not atheist.
I mean, the gods are
they
real
say
in it, so they have to...
And it's not against... The gods are not an idea of religion. It's a transactional relationship mm-hmm. that is completely defined. And there is no... It's almost as if there is no natural order. There's no chain of being, that there is a transactional relationship. So it's a very... I would say the whole thing is very anti-religion in that it posits this... the gods need us, but we don't need them sort of idea. And there's a lot of railing against the gods. And then at the end, there's this exceedingly abrupt thematic change with...
Like a 310 to Yuma kind of thing? That's how I feel about 310 to
Worse.
Yuma. It's one of my least favorite
Okay,
movies
I loved 310 to Yuma, so we're just going to have to go with that. And we're talking about the Russell Crowe version. It just, the end is so very pat, and so very, and now everybody's happy and it's okay.
So it's a studio end.
Oh, it's a very studio end. Very studio. I mean, you're talking
does
about...
Does it seem like a test audience end? Like they screwed up the ending and...
I think I knew exactly the end, yeah, because...
Because that happens.
The end that, it felt very tacked on. It felt... What's really awesome is there is this incredibly great moment where they totally deviate from the original. And I was like, hey, you know, nice. And then you immediately go into this complete thematic change, and it's very hard to describe without... or talk about what I really would have wanted without spoiling the movie. But
you can find a way.
Suffice it to say that it would have been perfectly acceptable to sort of leave well enough alone and allow the hero's journey to continue and or end without bringing in literally Deus Ex Machina to make things really hunky-dory and awesome.
All right.
And especially because of the relationship that is established between Perseus and Zeus and Perseus and the gods as a class, the end is just, you're just like...
Sounds lazy.
It's exceedingly lazy. They did not pay off their narrative debt. But you're right, now thinking about it, it's a very test audience ending. It's a very... Let's see if it makes
like,
it better.
We just dropped $120 million on this movie. We want people to walk out happy.
Pretty much. Whereas they could have walked out... If the rest of the film had been stronger narratively, I think they would have been able to get away with a stronger ending. But because it's so pulpy... I think they felt
that... It was formless and it needed a capper.
Well, no, it was very much supposed to be a swashbuckle movie, and swashbuckling movies have happy endings. That's just the way of it. And so I felt that if the movie overall had been stronger, they would have been able to get away with a better ending. But as it was, I think people were like, well, what happens with this? The Pegasus effects were gorgeous. Huh. The winged horses were awesome. They looked great. So there's an awful lot of shiny things. Someone was a crow in another life. The gods wear this armor that you may have seen in the previous that's super shiny.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they literally glow?
They're literally super shiny, glowy. Hades' styling is awesome, and the Hades effects are great. All the shiny gods, it's not good. It's just really annoying. And everything sort of having to do with those gods is very shiny and annoying.
Really shiny?
It's very shiny.
Oh, so shiny.
So shiny. Oh, pretty as a picture.
They're always after me lucky charms.
Anyway, overall,
it's a pot of sugar at the
end. We went to see it because, you know, Clash of the Titans was... The original Clash of the Titans I loved when I came out. I was a little girl, and it was a Sword and Sandals epic.
It was on cable every week. Are you kidding?
And I think in many ways, I would have to go back and watch, but I really think that in many ways this is an inferior film.
It doesn't have Harry Hamlin.
It doesn't have Harry Hamlin. It doesn't have Harryhausen. But what it doesn't have is that I remember the original film with sort of Caliban and that sort
Calabose.
Of thing. Calabose. Thank you very much. There's a...
There's an undercurrent of pathos.
There's an undercurrent of pathos for him, and there's sympathy for him, and there's a similar character set up in the new one. And at the very last instant, they try to give you pathos, and they try to, like, eke a message out of this guy.
No, you don't do that at the last instant. You do that through the arc.
Yeah, and so his arc is not sympathetic. And it's played by, one of the guys from Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. Who's a fantastic actor whom I love, and I just felt he was completely wasted.
Yeah, that sounds like the kind of thing where someone writes stuff out of order, and they don't, you know, from a writing perspective, like I said, there has to be an arc that will give meaning to the ending of the arc for a character. And you can't just take it as given that the audience gives a shit. Whether it's because you take it as a given because they have goodwill towards the character from the previous version of the film, because whatever.
Yeah, this guy is... You are not set up to have any sympathy for this person. So the original, in many ways, I felt had a lot more soul and was a lot more honest as a story and just trying to... And this was very much a... Yay! I think Sam Worthington does a very serviceable job.
He usually does.
He's serviceable. He's not poor. There's some good supporting actors. The design for the Greek cities... is really quite good. It's consistent. There's some really good design moments. The painter, who's a student of arms and armor of Western Europe, quite enjoyed the design elements. The Greek people looked like Greek people. They were not
like
fair-scared blondes. In fact, the fairest guy in there is Sam Worthington.
Oh, wow.
Is sort of he has the lightest hair of anyone you see. Everyone else is
either... He's the golden boy, huh?
Has dark hair that's plaited, that's like braided, or the women have dark hair. Polly Walker, Attia from Rome, is in it, being an ancient bitch. Yay, Polly Walker, the ancient bitch!
Typecast much.
Just a bit. So yeah, it's, you know, matinee if you gotta. We saw it in 2D as well. We heard the 3D was really tacked on late, so we went to 2D.
That's what I heard as well.
But the Medusa scene's really good. It just kind of makes me want to go see the old one. Really, to see how much is different. So he doesn't have the relationship with Athena anymore. Mm. And the little owl. The little owl makes a cameo.
Oh, good.
Yeah, he's there. So he pulls him out of a trunk. And also the tactics of the soldiers he's with actually makes sense. There was very little red shirting. There was very little, like...
Weird. It sounds to me like you're describing a great movie with a terrible story.
It was a great movie with a terrible story. There was a lot of really good...
if it was like in untranslated Japanese? You just couldn't tell what anybody was saying? Or?
You know, what it seems like to me is that there was a really, really excellent second unit director. And that...
You got a big crew doing a lot of good work as well.
A lot of good work. There was a lot of really good ideas. Like, as I said, there were very few red shirt soldiers. Mm. And they didn't do the, I'm going off... Oh, I'll be right back. There were very few stupid deaths. It was like, this is a big fight, and or invulnerable people.
Mm.
People died, you know, in the fights, and shit got bad, and, you know, it's sort of this epic journey kind of thing is in it. And it felt really good. It felt really authentic, for lack of a better term. There's some manufactured conflict or what have you. You know, it had really good elements, and I think in a lot of ways I was somewhat disappointed because it had very fertile ground, and it was obvious that somebody... working on that film knew what the hell they were doing, but that they could not win out against market forces.
Well, or maybe it sounds like, and you can look at it occurring in many orders. You can say someone wrote a crap story and then someone brought on a lot of talented people. Or you could say that someone said, let's, you know, they just had a high concept. Like, let's do Clash of the Titans, but have it really be really, really, like, real. Mm-hmm. Like, real Greece, real Greeks, real fighting. And then someone was like, okay, we need a story. And by then, this smart person had moved on to doing the stuff they cared about.
So I'd be really interested to see the history of the screenwriting, the rewrites, reshoots. I think it would tell a deeper story. I was quite pleased with the treatment of the witches, who only have the one eye.
Oh, yeah.
I
remember that.
They came correct. It was good. Although there was, again, they brought up it was one of those things where they brought this thing up in the narrative and then just didn't follow through. Didn't follow through in any way. And sort of left this thing hanging, and you're just like, okay, if you do this huge journey to get this prophecy you're not supposed to hear, and then you don't fucking do anything with it?
You just wasted...
It was prophecies, like, interruptus. It sucked. So, you know, that was a bit of blowing. And one of the things I wanted to note from the previews for that film, of which there were far too many, I mean, I love previews as much as the next girl, but get to the goddamn movie, was that in the vein of Armageddon and Deep Impact, we have the same movie coming twice. We have The Losers and The Expendables.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The Expendables is the Sylvester Stallone, Bruce Willis, Jet Li, Jason
right,
Statham.
It's all stars.
Central America.
You know what? There's a lot more stars in The Expendables.
Yes. And yeah, The Losers.
You could say that you're getting the same movie a third time with The A-Team.
Indeed. These are both sort of very much in that vein. They both... The Losers is with Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who played the comedian in Watchmen, just like Javier Bardem.
Didn't he play Herbert West Reanimator? Or am I thinking of someone else?
Never seen it.
Okay.
Can't say. So, it's previews for the same movie. It's rag-dag bunch of scrappy mercenaries declares war against ex-government. They've been done wrong, and they need to fight back, and there's only five of them, and there's a hot chick who will be gotten by one of them, and it will be fun. Now, they both looked, for what they are, kind of good. The Expendables is definitely banking on and really playing up the idea that, you know, people like Stallone get a little old for this.
Yeah.
And it actually playing that up and saying things, you know, at one
He's
point
too old for this shit,
someone
yeah.
is like, dude, what happened to you? I got my ass kicked.
The thing that bothered me about the trailer for The Losers was that there was almost no talking in it. It was just shots of Zoe Saldana shooting stuff and things blowing up.
Yes.
Which means
Have a lot of good dialogue.
Not only do they not have a decent plot, they couldn't even come up with decent things for someone to say.
Yeah, not a whole lot of good one-liners.
Yeah.
As opposed to The Expendables, which was a plethora of excellent one-liners.
Yeah.
They make fun of Jet Li's height.
Can they string these lines together into an actual script? Who knows?
Yeah. It does have the Statham.
The Statham. Well, that means the baker's going to go see it.
I will go with the baker to see the Statham.
Wow, action chick flick. Hmm.
Dude, it's the Statham. He's the hot. I finally saw Crank.
You can stop saying the, by the way.
I finally saw Crank. I had never seen Crank before. I thoroughly enjoyed that movie. The point where he's fucking her in public screaming out, I'm alive!
They're having a lot of fun.
They just said, we're not apologizing, we're not ameliorating. I like the fact they took their premise and they just ran.
Yeah.
They just sprinted with that premise. And I liked that. It was a really honest kind
of
filmmaking.
The Crank films do not hold back.
Or they don't try to apologize or make it okay or whatever. It's just literally like, here's our premise, we're going.
It's an R-rated cartoon.
It really is. All right, so I just finished reading Snow Crash.
What'd you think?
I was very impressed. It's not a lot of times that a sci-fi book can go over my head a little bit.
There are big ideas in it.
There are a lot of very big ideas, but they really boil it down in that last expository chapter when all the heads of the factions are together, which was really interesting. I enjoyed it. I had to check the copyright because...
Stevenson is
remarkably prescient. He actually had a note in the version that I read.
Is he prescient, or has society been influenced by his remarkable book?
So I read Goggled many times as Googled. It was actually the word avatar. And I looked and I saw that he wrote it in 93. It was published in 93. And he actually had a note in the version that I read that said, I am not the first person to use avatar. I came up with it independently, but this other group had been using it since the 60s.
That's honest, I suppose.
Yeah, very honest. I quite enjoyed it. I thought it was remarkably prescient. I thought it's really nice to read a book by another geek, you know, so that there's not this. And those are the technical things, and they know about computers. I kept seeing my friend who I used to work for, and he's a sysadmin in Berkeley. It doesn't hurt that he's Asian. And when I thought of hero protagonist, I just thought of him.
Right.
He fit the mold. That's a guy I know. Hero right. protagonist is a guy I know. Mm-hmm. So I really enjoyed it. I have Diamond Age right now, so I need to read that. I've been taking a little break from the reading to knit obsessively, and I will be back to the reading soon.
We need to come up with some kind of little robot that lets you knit and read at the same time and just turns the pages for you.
Okay.
Or do you need to be counting while you're knitting?
Sometimes I watch TV and knit.
Have you ever considered audiobooks? Would that count for Cannonball Read? Cannonball Listen?
Yes, it does.
Maybe that's a thing you should look into.
Dude, no. Because no? I need to take breaks from knitting because I've been knitting so much that I can barely use my left hand.
Mm-hmm.
So reading makes me stop knitting.
Oh, okay.
Long enough to regain the use of my extremities.
I'm just trying to help you fit in as much life as you can.
You know,
I'm an idea
sometimes man. It's really nice to step back. I do, it's one of those things... I just finished God of War 3, and I haven't finished Assassin's Creed 2, and somebody who might be doing a podcast with me was giving me crap about, how have you not finished that game yet? And I just like to say, you know, well, at the same time as working a more than 40-hour a week job, supporting my partner who's in school full-time, taking care of my household, crafting, reading, and playing video games, and oh yeah, I train 6 days a week for triathlon, I think I'm doing pretty good.
I'm just saying, I don't understand your priorities.
Oh, you think I should move the video games up?
I do!
And I would like to comment on our relative physiques.
What?
I'm just saying.
My nutritional store helps me cut down on trips to the kitchen during long gaming sessions.
As he holds his robust jelly sack. I have lost 30 pounds.
As I jiggle my front-mounted camel hump.
Oh my god. I'm just saying I like working out, okay?
I'm just saying I like sitting around.
To comment.
And eating. I like.
One of us was out of
bed. I like fried fat.
At 6 o'clock and on the road at 7:15 for an 8 o'clock workout.
One of us knows how to enjoy sleeping in.
One of us sent a text at 12:45 saying, sure, I'll be over, let me just get some breakfast.
Well, yeah, and?
Yeah. I like a lion. I lay in yesterday.
I like breakfast.
Speaking of breakfast, we should totally go get some lunch.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Podcast over.
So
we're gonna go eat.
If you notice that this podcast is posted more than a week after the recording date, which means you listened to the recording date.
It was in there.
Comment and we'll try and get you something.
Yeah, we'll think of something.
Okay. I'm Firehair.
I'm Sonic Rob.
And this has been Sonic Fire.
Thanks for joining us. Thanks a lot. Please feel free to visit our site at fireandsonic.com. We don't know how you got this podcast without going there.
We'll forget that iTunes thing someday.
Yeah, someday. You know, read a few articles, leave a comment, say hey, say hi, listen to the rest of our podcasts, and please do join us the next time we get around to releasing one of these things.
All right, thanks a lot. Bye.
Bye.